Good morning.
The broadcast.
Good morning. I'm Timothy Dawson, an administrative law judge designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as hearing officer for this hearing. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number PU-20-022. Before we begin today, please silence your cell phones. And Mr. Johnson is in Tioga. Please have people in that room sign a sign-in sheet. This is the hearing on the application of Liberty Midstream Solutions, LLC, regarding a pipeline project for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit. The pipeline project, the Alliance Sales Line project, is for an 8-inch residue gas pipeline of approximately 4.7 miles in length in Montrail and Williams counties in North Dakota. Let the record show that it is April 14, 2020, and it's a little, it's 9:07 a.m. Central Time at Nezik Consulting Service in Tioga, North Dakota. I'm appearing by telephone and by PSC website broadcast from the commission room here in the state capitol. The Public Service Commissioners are appearing from locations that they'll announce when they give their opening remarks, but are also appearing by PSC website broadcast and Open Voice, which is the telephone program by which we're being broadcast as well. The notice of filing and notice of hearing for this hearing specified the following issues to be considered and determined at this hearing. The issues to be considered as specified in the application for waiver of procedures and time schedules are the proposed facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects and that adherence to applicable procedures and time schedules may be waived. Number two, is it appropriate for the commission to waive any procedures and time schedules as requested in the application? The issues as the issues relate to the application of certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit are, will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Number two, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And number three, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environment impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? We will now make appearances. Mr. Bender, would you make your appearance and tell me where you are and the number of witnesses you expect to call and who they'll be and where they'll be from when they give their testimony?
Thank you, Your Honor. Lawrence Bender, P.O. Box 1855, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing on behalf of the applicant Liberty Midstream Solutions, LLC. I'm here at the offices of Frederickson & Byron, 1133 College Drive, Bismarck, North Dakota. I intend to call two witnesses, Eric Bengston, B-E-N-G-T-S-O-N. Mr. Bengston will be appearing from Denver, Colorado. And then another witness we'll be calling today is Nanette Elzinga, E-L-Z-I-N-G-A. And Ms. Elzinga will be appearing from Boulder, Colorado.
Mr. Johnson, would you make your appearance?
Brian Johnson, a legal for the PSC, and I'm not sure if I have an analyst as well. I'm appearing from Tioga, and if I have an analyst, I'm not sure where they're at.
Is Mr. Renfant appearing with Mr. Johnson today? Mr. Renfant, are you on? Okay, I don't think there's an analyst on board.
He's
today.
Right now he's trying to get the audio figured out on his system.
Okay.
Again, so, emails from him trying to help him.
Gotcha. Mr. Renfant will come and join
can
us.
You hear me now?
Yes, that's you.
Hi. This is Adam Renfant, PSC.
Okay. Are you going to want to participate in the hearing today by asking questions?
Please.
Yes, and if there isn't any objection, I'll allow it.
No objection, Your Honor.
Okay. Now it's time for a little description of the public testimony today. It's a little different than normal, but you may testify in person in Tioga today, and I hear that at least one person has showed up there and isn't going to testify at this time, but someone may do that. Also, you may do it by calling 701-328-4081, and you'll be placed in a queue, and somebody will call you back when it's time to testify. So you call in that number, talk to someone, and they'll say, we'll call you back when it's time for public testimony. That public testimony will be at the end of Liberty's presentation. I'd encourage anyone listening that has anything to say it. That's why we have these hearings, and the commissioners want to hear what you have to say, and what you have to say will be considered by the commissioners. I think it's time now for opening remarks by the commissioners. Commissioner Fedorchuk, I can see you.
Good.
Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. This is an exciting new day for the commission, the first time we've done something like this. I have a lot of hope that this is actually going to be a technology that we obviously will perfect, but use a lot in the future to increase public access and public participation in our public hearing process. This project today is pretty straightforward, relatively short project. The company has secured all the easements. There aren't exclusion and avoidance areas impacted to a very large degree or at all. So I think this was a good case to do a trial run of this kind of technology at this type of a hearing. And so there will no doubt be some hiccups along the way, as I realized this morning at 5:08 when I logged in and had no Wi-Fi for the first time this month. But anyway, we got it all worked out, and here we are, and looking forward to a great hearing. Thanks to everybody for making it happen, our IT people, Lawrence, for being open to it, you and your company. And also, Brian, thank you for being the one to drive out to the site and man the fort down there. So look forward to a productive and, I think, relatively efficient hearing this morning. And I hope if there's people who have input to share, they will have a great opportunity to do so this morning. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Crosius.
Good morning, everyone. I would echo the same thoughts. Thank you, staff, for helping put this together. And I think the part I like the most outside of this specific hearing is the fact that it does increase public access, because people aren't always able for various reasons to travel to hearings, locations. And if we can enhance the process by increasing access and transparency, that's a very good thing. I think the application, as I have gone through it, is pretty straightforward, but I'll have a few questions. And thank you to the company as well for your willingness to continue to make investments in North Dakota. And hopefully everything goes smoothly, and we'll be able to approve the project at the end of the process itself. So thank you again.
Commissioner Christman. I can't hear you.
Sorry about that, Your Honor. I forgot to turn my microphone on.
I can hear you now.
I'm calling in from the ranch just west of Hazen, thanks to the great fiber service provided by West River Telecommunications Cooperative, one of our independent telecom companies in North Dakota. And I'll kind of ditto a lot of what the other commissioner said, but just add to it by saying, while this is a great alternative in a trying time to make sure that we can keep business that is able to keep going, I am somewhat concerned about it, having in earlier years been on the other side of some government type hearings that could have had profound impact on me. and not being experienced in that sort of thing. It's a different view than what we have when we deal with these kinds of hearings routinely and understand the process so well. For someone living out there that doesn't work with this kind of thing day to day and maybe never has in their life, it can be daunting at best and probably overwhelming at worst. This seems like a pretty routine and short project, but I just do want to emphasize we've had other projects that seemed pretty clear and non-controversial, and maybe a landowner that the company hasn't had to deal with, but you know, maybe an adjacent landowner or something like that, has some profound impact that no one would have just been able to realize, and we've been able to alleviate some of those kinds of problems in past cases. So because we're making this test run, or first run, I guess, at doing this interactively, I do want to emphasize that we are allowing some time for people to turn in comments after today's hearing closes, because that's the whole point of why we typically have always held these hearings in the county, or at least one of the counties where the activity was going to take place, to make it convenient, because we want to hear from people who have those types of concerns. That's the whole point of our job, to make sure that something doesn't just kind of happen by accident that has an adverse impact on someone or something. And so we encourage you, if you're listening in and are unable to call into the number and talk to us interactively later on in the hearing, to send in your comments. We take them seriously, we value them, and it helps us make the best decisions possible.
Are there any preliminary opening remarks, matters, or motions? Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Your Honor. No motions. Perhaps just some brief comments, not necessarily an opening statement, but some very brief comments. Because we are all appearing remotely, what I did on behalf of the company was approximately a week ago. I pre-filed an exhibit one, which will basically be referred to by the witnesses on several occasions. I would point out, to perhaps make it a little bit easier for everyone to follow, we marked exhibit one, each page, with what us lawyers call bait stamps. And if you look at that in the bottom right-hand corner, you will see LMS and then a number. In that way, when a witness is referring to a certain page, hopefully it'll provide the commissioners with the ability to more easily follow what we're referring to. And I would ask if the commissioners or the commission staff has any questions, and they're referring to a different page, to a particular page, they also refer to the bait stamp number, and I think that will result in the hearing going a bit more smoothly. Your Honor, typically in these types of cases, the commission will waive foundation and allow us to offer the exhibit. So at this point in time, I would offer exhibit one, and then after the Your Honor has reached a decision on that, then we'd be ready to proceed with our first witness.
Mr. Johnson, do you have any matters, motions, or anything to say about the offered exhibit number one?
No comments and no objection to the admission of exhibit one.
Okay, exhibit one is marked and admitted. And Mr. Bender, you may call your first witness.
Thank you again, Your Honor, and thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. As I indicated a few moments ago, our first witness will be Eric Bengston, B-E-N-G-T-S-O-N. And Eric, if I mispronounced your name, I apologize.
No problem.
Mr. Bengston. You hear me?
Bengston. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
The first letter is a V or a B? A B as in
boy.
Boy, okay. Thank you. And you're from Denver, Colorado. You're in Denver, Colorado right now?
I am, yes, sir.
Okay. Before you testify today, I'm required by law to tell you the penalties for perjury in this state. Perjury is a Class C felony punishable by a fine of up to $10,000 or a term of imprisonment of up to 5 years or both. Do you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
I do understand, yes, sir.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Bender, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, can you all hear Eric? He's a little quiet on my end. Do you need him to speak a little louder?
He's clear here.
Apologies. I'll speak up.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Eric, could you please state your full name for the record?
It's Eric Joseph Bengtson.
And can you spell your last name, please?
That's B as in boy, E N as in Nancy, G T S as in Sam, O N as in Nancy.
And Eric, by whom are you employed?
Liberty Midstream Solutions, LLC.
And what is your business address?
It is 1200 17th Street, suite number 2200, and that's in Denver, Colorado, 80202.
And could you briefly describe for us, Eric, your educational background and work experience?
Sure. I received a Bachelor of Science in Chemical and Petroleum Refining Engineering from the Colorado School of Mines in 1996, and then went on to receive an MBA from the University of Colorado at Denver in 2001. I've worked in the industry for 23 years with experience in design, construction, and operation of midstream pipelines and surface facilities. I have experience as a process engineer, project manager, engineering manager, and operations manager. I've just got extensive experience in gathering, treating, and processing of natural gas and produced water systems.
And Eric, can you please tell us what your position is with Liberty Midstream Solutions at this time?
I'm the Vice President of Operations and Engineering.
And in that capacity, can you provide for us just a brief discussion of your duties in that position?
I'm responsible for project development and execution, so essentially concept to startup of projects. I'm also responsible for the ongoing operation of all the midstream assets, so safety, reliability, staffing, budgeting, program implementation and execution, et cetera.
Now let's switch gears just a little bit and talk about this project in particular. You've given us your background, your educational background, your work experience. Let's talk about the project itself. Can you tell us who will own and operate the project that's under consideration here today?
Liberty Midstream Solutions, LLC will both own and operate the project.
And what's your role with respect to the project?
I'll be acting as project manager on this project.
Okay. And can you tell us a bit as to Liberty's experience in the pipeline industry?
Okay. Liberty Midstream Solutions is a Denver-based company focused on providing producer-oriented midstream services in emerging oil and gas resource plays to help producers maximize returns on investments through reliable and efficient oil, gas, and water gathering, gas processing, water delivery, and produced water disposal services. We currently operate produced water and produced gas gathering systems, as well as a natural gas processing plant and an associated residue gas line in Williams and Montreal counties, North Dakota. And we've been doing that for a little over, well, the business has been open for over 5 years. The plant's been in service a little over three.
Okay, Eric, I'm going to have you direct your attention to what has been previously marked as Exhibit 1. is that the consolidated application, certificate of corridor compatibility, and route permit that Liberty Midstream Solutions filed in this matter?
Yes, it is.
Now, let's just generally talk about the application, Eric, if we can. Can you provide us with just a, shall I say, a general description of the project you're requesting the commission to approve?
Absolutely. the project, it's located in Williams and Montreal counties. It's approximately 4.7 miles long. It's an 8-inch diameter steel residue gas transmission pipeline. It'll extend from our existing county line plant near Tioga to a third-party transmission pipeline, which is Alliance's Tioga Lateral. From the interconnect point where we tie into Alliance, the residue gas will eventually be transported through Alliance's Tioga Lateral and into the Chicago markets.
Okay, and let's then turn to, let's go to Exhibit 1, and let's turn to page LMS 059. There's a figure on that page. Tell me when you get there.
Okay.
Why don't you just briefly describe what's contained on Figure 1, which has been identified as LMS 059?
That's a map of the proposed pipeline. There's a survey area centered on the pipeline that depicts the requested corridor based on the surveys that we've performed. And then the center line that's dashed is the center line of the pipeline.
And there's a designation as to where the current gas plant is, and then also where you'll be connecting to the pipeline. Can you describe that for us very briefly?
Correct. Yeah. So in section 24, in the upper left of the dashed line, is the existing county line gas plant where the pipeline would start. And then in the lower right to the southeast, at the termination point of that same dash line, is the tie-in point with Alliance.
Okay. Perhaps in conjunction with this particular figure or exhibit, which has been labeled as LMS 059, can you briefly describe for us the proposed project?
Sure thing. In terms of the purpose and need of the project, or are we talking about just the project itself? Sorry.
Just the project of itself to begin with. We can get into the need a little bit later.
Okay.
If it's easier for you, Eric, you can discuss both the purpose and the need if you'd like. It probably makes sense to combine those two issues.
Okay. And so, our existing county line gas plant has a sales outlet that's existing. I referenced it before. We have a residue line that feeds into Williston Basin Interstates system, or WBI, and it exists along our tie-in point is along their line 7, and WBI's current system in that neighborhood is fully subscribed, and it's constrained on a regular basis. And so expansion with firm service in that area, it just is not available at this point. They have an expansion plan, but it's not scheduled to be in service until the fourth quarter of 2021. And in addition to that, there's been some recent announcements by Northern Border Pipeline that they're going to impose some British thermal unit specification, or BTU limit specs, on their pipeline to limit, essentially limit the BTU value of the gas coming into the Northern Border system, which is fed by WBI. And Liberty's plant We have a refrigeration style gas plant that's not able to meet that BTU limit, that 1100 BTU limit, without some serious modifications. But Alliance's line does allow for the transport of higher BTU gas, where we can comply with the specification and feed that market. So this would give our customers an alternative for transporting their higher BTU gas without requiring some costly upgrades to a cryogenic style plant.
So if I could briefly summarize, you kind of got three issues here. One, WBI's pipeline is basically full at this point in time. Northern Border Pipeline, you have constraints with respect to transporting rich gas. So what you're looking for is an alternative, and your alternative is to build this short line to connect to the Alliance Tioga lateral to ultimately go into the Alliance pipeline to go to markets in Chicago. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. And let's just talk a little bit about the Chicago market. I'm sure the commission is aware of this, but perhaps just a brief discussion might be appropriate. With respect to the Alliance pipeline, there is a, in essence, a gas plant in Chicago. So liquids that would generally be stripped from a gas plant here in North Dakota, that rich gas can go to Chicago, liquids can be stripped, liquids can be sold in Chicago, and then there's a market for the residue as well. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, they have what I'd call a straddle plant that does exactly that, that takes the higher BTU gas as it gets closer to Chicago and then reduces it at that point.
And what can you tell us about the market for liquids in Chicago versus North Dakota? More market in Chicago?
It depends. There's seasonal factors, you know, but currently I believe that is a better market than what we're experiencing in North Dakota. For us, when you're looking at oil development, producers are more, to be honest, they're more concerned about moving their gas so that they can produce the oil, because their economics are much more determined by oil price than the gas economics. We're looking for market access, but we also believe over the long haul that, as of 3 months ago, the gas market in Chicago was not as good as what Northern Border could offer, but we think over time that will come to parity.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that. Let's talk a little bit about the schedule, if this application is approved, as to when this line will be built, and then also the cost.
Okay. Yeah, we originally, when we submitted the application, we planned to start immediately after approval. I think in the application, it might have even stated February. We were probably a little too ambitious on how soon we could get through. But the conditions right now, obviously, are very dynamic with oil price doing what it's done over the last few weeks. However, there's still uncertainty. Like I talked about that BTU issue on Northern Border, it's still uncertain on how WBI will implement the changes that Northern Border makes. And so it's still possible that this project could start as early as this summer. But if it's driven by development, that could be later. In total, the project should take 3 months or less after construction starts. And we anticipate the cost to be $4.6 million approximately.
Okay, thank you. Let's talk a little bit about site selection and project viability. What factors did Liberty take into consideration when selecting the route for this proposed project?
We conducted a thorough site analysis and considered several factors. We coordinated with landowners, local officials, agencies, and existing infrastructure owners to see what was available and amenable to folks there, to stakeholders there. We looked at the project's geographic requirements. You know, specifically, we had to get from our plant to the Alliance pipeline itself to a suitable delivery point. We considered complying, obviously, with the commission siting criteria, including exclusion areas, avoidance areas, the selection and policy criteria that are contained there. We also looked at trying to co-locate with existing infrastructure where possible, and we've done that in several places along the project. We looked to avoid and minimize potential impacts to the existing infrastructure, landowners, and environmentally sensitive areas. We ensured constructability and maximized our operational efficiencies while minimizing safety concerns. And finally, ensured the ability to acquire the needed right-of-way from the landowners. So all those factors led to the route that we see in front of us.
And many of those things that you just mentioned that Liberty took into consideration, the next witness is going to discuss those in further detail. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, Commissioner Fedorchak alluded to this a bit in her opening statement, but I want you to discuss it as well. What's the status of the right-of-way acquisition for the proposed project?
We've secured right-of-way by obtaining easements from landowners whose properties crossed by the projects. the project. All easements have been obtained. Landowners have been compensated for the easements and will be compensated for damages resulting from construction of the project. And then landowners have also been contacted to obtain permission to survey and will be contacted as the project moves forward when we look to move forward for construction or any additional surveys or field investigations that are needed.
And if this application is granted, how will Liberty keep landowners advised as to Liberty's construction schedule for the proposed project?
And we contact them directly with the anticipated construction date well in advance of the start of construction. We'll give them more specific dates as to when it'll start and our anticipated completion date on their property. And then typically there's also follow-on discussions after reclamation as well, just to make sure that we're meeting their expectations for what they had signed up for.
At this point in time, are you or anyone else at Liberty aware of any objections to the proposed project?
No, I'm not.
All right, let's switch gears just a bit, talk a little bit about engineering and operational design. Let's start first with the right-of-way. Can you briefly describe the right-of-way and what I mean by describe? You know, how many feet are you going to need in terms of the temporary workspace and then the permanent right-of-way?
Yeah, we'll have for most of the project, it's a 100-foot wide construction right-of-way. It narrows in a couple of areas just to avoid any impacts to identified sites or environmentally sensitive areas. The permanent right-of-way will shrink down to 25 feet wide. And then the location of the pipeline within the permanent right-of-way may vary a little bit, but typically it's right down the middle. So we have 12 and a half feet on each side for emergency needs or ongoing maintenance.
And roads, there's always a concern about roads. Will any roads be constructed as part of the project?
Yes, we will need a couple of access roads, but they'll be restored to pre-construction conditions unless otherwise specified by the property owner, and then approved regulatory agencies with jurisdictions are also consulted and we gain their approval. We considered our existing right-of-way where we're at in an effort to maximize co-location with other infrastructure where appropriate, so we're not treading over new ground where we can.
Okay, and let's talk about the pipe specifically. Can you tell us about the proposed pipe in terms of its diameter, its wall thickness, its maximum operating pressure, those sorts of things?
Yep, the pipeline is an 8-inch diameter steel pipe. The thickness is 0.322 inches, which gives us a maximum operating pressure of 2,180 pounds per square inch, or PSI. We'll typically operate it at or below 2,000 PSI, and our maximum operating temperature is 120 degrees Fahrenheit. That's not a metallurgical requirement. That's a coating requirement on the outside of the pipe. The metal is good to much higher, but we make sure that we never operate it higher than 120 degrees. typical flow rate when we start will be 10 million cubic feet per day or less at startup, but we have expansion capabilities of 80 to 120 million cubic feet per day, depending upon where compression is set and what Alliance does on their lateral.
And what sort of surface facilities, if any, will the project include?
Pipeline markers and cathodic protections, cathodic test stations along the route is all we'll need.
Okay. I always like this question. Will the project be designed, constructed, and operated in compliance with all applicable federal and state regulations?
Yes, the project will be designed, constructed, and operated to meet or exceed all federal, state, and local laws and regulations, including the U.S. DOT PHMSA regulations.
Discuss for us the personnel that will be involved in construction of the project.
We will engage a qualified third-party construction contractor. There'll be approximately 20 construction workers on that project during peak. We'll use local labor where possible, but may require specialty construction labor from time to time that comes from out of state. Depends on what the labor situation looks like.
Okay, and with respect to safety, will the contractors be required to adhere to specific requirements?
Yeah, we have a pre-construction safety and environmental orientation that we'll hold in the field to focus on safety compliance, incident reporting, protocols for determining, correcting, and documenting safety non-compliance, and our expectations, Liberty's expectations for compliance enforcement. All construction personnel will be briefed and trained on all construction and environmental requirements, including laws, rules, and regulations applicable to the work. And then we'll have a qualified and experienced safety representative on site.
And once again, if this project is approved by the commission, what steps will Liberty take to ensure that the project is operating properly?
Now, we follow a written manual of procedures for conducting our normal operations and maintenance and for handling abnormal operations and emergencies per the DOT. It's 49 CFR 192.
Can you discuss for us some of the provisions that are included in your manual?
Several things includes retention of our construction operation and maintenance records, including records of the pipeline and equipment inspections. We have procedures for reporting spills, accidents, and safety-related conditions. We have identification of sensitive areas along the project route that would require an immediate response to prevent hazards to the public if the facilities failed or malfunctioned. Also procedures for receiving, identifying, and classifying notices of events which need immediate response by project personnel or notice to fire, police, or other appropriate public officials. Also procedures for maintaining lists and contact information of area contractors that may be used to respond to a spill or an emergency.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about a monitoring system. I assume you're gonna have a modern monitoring system on this pipeline to detect operational issues. If so, can you describe that for us?
Yes, the most direct measurement for us is inlet pressure to the pipeline itself, whether it's too low or too high. We'll monitor the pipeline inlet pressure at the existing County Line gas plant. There'll also be a relief valve at the gas plant just at the start of the pipeline to protect it from overpressure. So in an overpressure event, Those relief valves are very, very loud. There will be no mistaking that there's an issue if there ever is an issue. Also, the pipeline pressure, temperature, and flow will be monitored per our plant control system. And also, the aforementioned DOT program outlines our preventative maintenance, inspection, line patrols, leak detection, and other pipeline integrity procedures that will follow to ensure the safe operation of the project.
And has Liberty given any consideration as to how it's going to protect the pipeline from other activities on the surface?
Yes, just like our other residue line, we clearly marked the pipeline itself, so that's easily seen. If you're standing in one place along the line, you see pipeline markers in both directions, so there's no ambiguity as to where the pipeline actually runs. Also, as part of our DOT program, we have a damage prevention program, which it's established to prevent damage to the pipeline from excavation activities or other encroachments on the right-of-way. So the damage prevention program will also include participation in our North Dakota One Call system that requires prior notification when excavation by third parties is to occur near the pipeline. Also, as part of our DOT program, any excavation activity that occurs that where our line is crossed is monitored on-site by our personnel, and the pipe will be checked for external damage if we expose the pipe during the dig. In addition, any repairs or replacements made to the pipeline, if we take out a section of pipe or a fitting, we have to inspect the inside and outside and document the condition and determine if there's any remedial action necessary to protect the remaining pipe due to corrosion or other factors. Finally, the pipeline itself, when it's built, has an external coating that I referred to before that's a corrosion protection mechanism. And we also operate and maintain a cathodic protection system for the pipeline to protect it from external corrosion as well.
Eric, if the application that Liberty has submitted is granted and the pipeline is built, does Liberty have any plans for inspection of the pipeline on a regular basis?
Yes, we have to work hand in hand with the PHMSA representatives from state during the construction, but also there'll be regular monitoring and inspections periodically as required by the DOT regulations. They look not only at the pipe itself, but check our program, the procedures, our training, and our development of our personnel. And there's also check to make sure that we've done our regular foot patrols of the permanent right-of-way to ensure there's no leaks or new construction or soil shifting, anything like that.
And once again, if the application is approved and the pipeline is built, does Liberty have any plans for public awareness of the project and pipeline safety?
Yes, again, as part of our ongoing program that we already have for our existing line, we establish and maintain good relationships with local residents. That starts in the planning stage for us. When we talk through the route and discuss easements with the landowners, also just by notifying landowners when we're going to be on their property, either for construction or ongoing maintenance or right-of-way patrols. We'll continue to maintain that contact with the local government officials as well. Relate any project-related information. If concerns arise, Liberty works with officials to resolve the issues. And as part of our DOT program, we're required to maintain liaison with public officials, local emergency professionals, and excavators, as well as the affected public.
In terms of emergency situations that might arise, what steps paths or will Liberty take to ensure that it's ready in the event that there is an emergency on the pipeline?
We have, as part of our DOT program, one of the elements is an emergency response program that instruct our personnel in safely carrying out the operations, maintenance, and emergency procedures related to what they're assigned. This also includes instruction on the characteristics and hazards of the residue gas being transported, recognitions that are likely to cause emergencies, and then the steps necessary to control or minimize the impacts of an accidental release. And I believe a copy of our emergency action plan is included in Appendix C of the application.
And does Liberty typically coordinate with local emergency responders with respect to its current assets, and will it do the same with respect to this pipeline if the application is granted?
Absolutely. Again, as part of our DOT program, we establish and maintain liaison with fire, police, and other appropriate public officials and document those discussions. We'll also, you know, those same procedures will apply to this pipeline, the same as our existing residue line. And if they're, we also have as part of our emergency response plan, obviously notifying officials of pipeline emergencies and coordinating with them. We do some outreach meetings and talk through our emergency response plan so that those local emergency professionals and officials are aware of the steps we plan to take and anything that we need to coordinate with them in an emergency.
Okay, let's talk just a little bit more here. We're nearing the end of your testimony, but let's talk a little bit about other permits and approvals that Liberty is required. Can you direct our attention to the table that sets forth the other approvals that are required and where Liberty is in obtaining those approvals?
My apologies, I'm just catching up to page 39.
Yeah, so you're referring to LMS 039?
Yes, sir.
Just give us a little bit of time here to catch up with you. Okay, you can discuss that particular table.
Okay. Yes, all of these that show as pending will be obtained prior to the start of any construction. Obviously, the Public Service Commission one we're talking about now, and then we've got a few other permits that we're working through, but we'll obtain those prior to the start of any construction.
Hey, finally, Eric, can you tell us briefly what some of the benefits are of the of this project if it's approved by the commission?
Well, again, the adding physical takeaway for residue gas gives producers an option to grow while maintaining their gas capture requirements in that neighborhood. So it helps, you know, from a flaring in the area, it should reduce that, and also getting just getting that gas to market. There's obviously some financial impacts that are good for the common good of the public in terms of tax type revenue. The project also provide other producers an alternative for marketing and transporting their higher BTU gas without requiring a costly upgrade from the refrigeration style plants to a cryogenic recovery plant. Most of the plants in our immediate neighborhood are not cryogenic plants. There are some, but several are not of that technology and can't meet that high BTU specification on Northern Border that historically we've all been able to send 1,200 BTU gas, which was part of WBI's tariff, but that that most likely will change in the near future based on Northern Border's move. It also gives direct benefits to the local community through the temporary, the construction employment. There's jobs to operate and maintain the pipeline and additional tax revenues and indirect benefits from project-related purchases of local goods and services, things like gravel, fuel, hotel, food, topsoil if needed, all those things.
Your Honor, I don't have any other questions of this witness at this time. Your Honor, I don't have any other questions. Can anyone hear me?
I hear you, Lawrence. There must be a technical challenge at the PSC.
Okay.
We'll just hold tight.
This is Steve. I'm checking.
Thank you, Steve.
I didn't have my microphone on, so maybe people weren't hearing me very well. Is Mr. Johnson in Tioga there?
I am, Your Honor.
Okay. That was my fault, I think. Do you have any questions for this witness?
I have a couple. One might be for the next witness, but
I'll proceed.
Determine that.
Proceed.
You stated that part of the safety features of this gas line is that there's a pressure release valve at the County Line plant. Is that plant manned 24 hours a day?
It is not, but we have call outs in the event of a high pressure alarm or anything along those lines. Our staff is there 18 out of 24 hours daily, and the remaining six we have an alarm system for callouts should there ever be an issue.
Okay,
and the mechanical
second question,
just to clarify that, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
That relief valve is a mechanical device that will protect the pipeline regardless of whether someone is there or not, if that makes sense. But the response in terms of shutting down the line, shutting off any equipment, that we have the ability to even operate remotely from guys that get call-outs. So they don't have to get all the way to the plant to shut that down.
Okay, thank you. My next question is, it's a question about horizontal drilling. Would that be better for the next witness or for you?
I think I'll probably be the best
question, Brian, and then we can determine whether Nan can handle it or Eric.
Sure. I noticed that there's three areas that are being horizontally drilled, or that could be. Two are being drilled and the third one is not because it's farmland. Is there a reason why the third isn't being horizontally drilled as well?
And are you talking, Brian, excuse me for interrupting, but are you talking in terms of those water bodies that are going to be horizontally drilled?
Correct. I believe it's either a water body or a wetland crossing.
Eric, you think that's better for Nan to respond to?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
I'll hold that question, and I have no further questions.
Mr. Renfant, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I understand from the stormwater pollution prevention plan that Liberty will be performing inspections of erosion and sediment controls. Will you file copies of those inspection reports with the commission once completed?
Yes.
And just one more. You mentioned a damage prevention program. If that's spelled out in a formal document, will you be willing to file a copy of that with the commission prior to construction?
Yes. That's. I know that the PHMSA personnel in the for North Dakota, we share that with them regularly. There'd be no reason to not share that.
Thank you. No further questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Renfant, are you at home in Bismarck today?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchuk, any questions for this witness?
I do, just a couple, and thank you very much, Mr. Bankston, for your testimony so far. Appreciate it. I think you've been coming across pretty well, maybe a little garbled at times, and I think that might be because you're calling in from a web app, not just the phone line. So first of all, the timeline, you mentioned that the timeline got a little bit pushed back, but I just wanted to make sure that, because we didn't receive the application until January, and that's when you were expecting the permit. Was there a delay on your end in delivering the application, or did you just not kind of understand the time period on our end for getting through an application?
Yeah, absolutely. I apologize. My remark was only meant on our side in terms of my hope to get our own house in order prior to getting the project started. That yeah, there's not been an issue.
Sure. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't your view that we had kind of dragged our feet or anything of that nature. So. Okay, and then you mentioned that there is that the pipe will be co-located with other facilities where possible. Can you provide any more information as to what length of the line might be co-located, or if any of it is, or you know, what's sort of the status of the amount of co-location or using a previous corridor that's already been disturbed, if that's possible in this project?
We parallel an existing gathering line of ours, and I apologize. Let me see if I can grab the map. I don't have the exact percentage of existing, but I believe it's roughly maybe a third of the right-of-way parallels our existing corridor.
Very good.
It's a gathering corridor. Yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you. And then you mentioned the operating pressure that the typical daily or operating pressure that you expect to be using, but I missed it. I was looking at something else at the time. Can you just repeat that?
The maximum operating pressure based on calculations would be 2,180 PSI. But we don't plan to operate over 2,000 PSI based on the hydraulics that we see currently with Alliance.
Okay. All right.
It's really a function of how much activity they have on their lateral that dictates what the pressure is at our delivery point, along with our contribution to that. But we don't foresee it being over 2,000 PSI.
And is this line and the gas plant your primary investments in North Dakota and in the Bakken?
Yes, that's correct.
And where are the other key locations of your company's operations?
Liberty Midstream Solutions currently only operates in North Dakota and the Bakken.
And are you affiliated with a larger company, or is it, are you kind of a smaller operator?
We're a wholly owned subsidiary of Liberty Resources, which is an upstream affiliate of ours that does drilling and completions work in the Bakken. But there also is another Liberty Midstream, I believe, out of Dallas, but it's not Liberty Midstream Solutions, and we're not affiliated with that Liberty.
Okay. So it sounds like most of your company's based in the Bakken. Is that correct?
Correct. All of it is. And yes, we're a smaller operator.
And so why do you live in Denver?
I think originally when our founders started the venture, we had intentional, actually for a period of time, we had operations in the Powder River Basin in Wyoming, and had thoughts of expanding into other basins as well. But currently all we have is what's in North Dakota.
Okay. And so is your corporate headquarters in Colorado, or is it in North Dakota?
Our corporate headquarters is in Colorado, in Denver. We have our field office is at the gas plant in Tioga.
Okay. And your operations center for monitoring, that's based where?
I'm sorry, you kind of garbled a little bit. Could you repeat that?
Sure. Where do you have your control center for your facilities?
The control system, the computers that control the plant and would provide the surveillance information are all located at the plant in Tioga.
Okay, very good. How many employees do you have in North Dakota?
Currently, we have 8. We've got an operations manager, 6 operators, and then an administrative assistant.
Okay. And with the recent market changes, has that changed your timeline at all for this project?
From a development standpoint, the driver there seems to be less because activity may decrease, but the unknown for us in this project and part of the reason for developing it in the first place was the BTU issue on Northern Border, which we don't have visibility to, and we're not really clear on whether slowing development in the Bakken will actually help or hurt that problem, if that makes sense. Because the blending that has to happen is dictated by how much Bakken gas goes in north to northern border.
So are your plans to continue with construction this spring?
I'm trying to articulate this correctly. We're waiting to see essentially what WBI is, how they're going to respond and what our options are. But yes, our intent would be, if things go the way that we think that they will, that we want to have that option available to customers. But it also depends on our own upstream affiliates' development planning, how much they plan to keep on production, the current pricing. There's multiple variables, unfortunately. But if it comes down to, can we produce oil or not, because our gas plant can't meet spec, and this project would have to move forward.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, I know there's a lot of variables right now and a lot of uncertainty. So can appreciate the difficult situation you guys are in. I think that concludes my questions for you, sir. I appreciate it.
Commissioner.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk today and making the accommodation for us. With the online version here.
Commissioner Crotius, any questions?
Good afternoon, or I should say good morning, Eric. And I didn't state that I am in Bismarck at my home. So that is where I'm at today. Just a few questions for you. Can you tell me a little bit about the County Line gas plant? Is the capacity of the plant at 30 million cubic feet per day currently? Is that the approximate level of production, or did I did I look up the wrong information?
Well, no, that we are currently running 10 million a day through the plant. It is capable of up to 30 million cubic feet a day.
Okay. I'm assuming the plant was not permitted through the PSC because it was below the threshold?
Correct. Yeah, and the residue line the same just because it was less than 1 mile.
So the pipeline has a capacity potential of 80 million cubic feet per day. Is that correct?
That's correct. Hydraulically, yes, sir.
Okay. But I think you had mentioned between 80 to 120 million cubic feet for expansion potential.
Correct. That would require some compression on Alliance's line, but we've discussed those possibilities with them. We've seen some pretty wide-ranging gas forecasts based on different producers and different possible deals that we've looked at with other producers in the area. Those are always in flux, but yeah, right now that looks like a lot more than what it's definitely more than what the plant could put out currently. But we wanted to make sure that we didn't have to do this twice if we went to an expansion for a larger plant.
Okay, so I have the number, just so I have the numbers correct. It's constructed to handle up to 80 million, but with compression, it could move to the 160 to 200 million cubic feet.
No, I'm sorry, that would be 120 is the maximum.
Okay.
No compression.
Okay, 120 would be the maximum, which would require expansion at the plant if that came to fruition, correct?
Correct. We'd have to expand our plant. We'd also have to add, or Alliance would have to add compression on their line.
Okay. Yeah, and if that day should ever come, but with some of the forecasts in Bakken in terms of production levels, not only of oil, but associated gas. Just a reminder that the siting threshold of the plant would be 100 million cubic feet per day, if I have my number correctly. So just a point for future reference, if it should get to that point, which is certainly a possibility down the road.
Yeah, that's absolutely our hope, is to be having that discussion with you all, because the opportunity came up to expand the plant, but understood that 100 million is the limit for the siting part of the plant.
Yeah, just something to keep in mind. Can you tell me, if this is a question for you or the next witness, but how do you decide between sandbags and foam blocks? What is the criteria when you're in rocky terrain on which one is better to use?
Between sandbags and, I'm sorry?
And foam blocks, you're lowering the pipe into the rocky areas of the side booms on the tractors. I had read the application.
I'll be honest, we don't, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
My experience has been solely with sandbags in the Bakken. I don't believe we've had projects to date that have used the foam blocks.
Okay, I don't remember what I should have written down the page on the application. It was more of a curiosity question, and but also related to construction techniques. So. Do you do follow-up reseeding along the pipeline route? I know you had talked in the application, or it indicates that, of course, the area would be reseeded, disturbed ground. If there's a poor take, you would go back in, I'm assuming, and reseed as necessary?
Correct. Absolutely.
And the same would hold true with weed control?
Correct.
Okay, and then one other related to that, the equipment, is that equipment that you had indicated using local labor, would the equipment be regional or within the state of North Dakota, or is that shipped in?
Most times it's rented locally. Depends on the contractor, but the contractors we've used in the past have a local presence, and so if they own theirs, it's they'll use theirs, but
Do they have stringent cleaning protocols in place to make sure that the equipment doesn't have, I'm going to say, an excessive amount of mud, because there are probably nooks and crannies where mud may be attached to the equipment, but it also can move weed seeds around, particularly noxious weeds. Do you know what their safety cleaning protocol is?
I believe Nan may be able to speak more directly to this, but I know that we have protocols to make sure that we don't contaminate fields or bring invasive weeds into the construction area.
Okay, thank you. And I think my final question is, can you describe the permanent erosion controls in the right-of-way that you stated in the application? Are those essentially slope breakers?
Can you refer me to, I apologize, which page we're talking about?
It would be page 12 of the original or the initial application, I believe.
Just want to make sure I answer the right question.
It's on 10.1.7. And the first paragraph, last sentence, permanent erosion controls will be installed within the right-of-way during this phase. I'm just wondering if those go beyond slope breakers.
I would have to get back to you on the details of that, unfortunately, unless Nan knows for sure. I apologize. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, if you could follow up, that would be fine.
Yeah, okay.
Just a relationship to once the pipe is in the ground and to address any potential landowner concerns, et cetera. So.
Yeah, what I can say is that we understand that our presence there is going to be longer than the construction of the pipeline, and so we make sure that we satisfy our landowners so that, because you know, number one, because it's the right thing to do. Number two, we know we'll end up at some point working with these folks again, and it's not in our best interest to have people unhappy or have an unsatisfactory job on their property. But we'll get you an answer to that specific question for sure.
Okay, perfect. No other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman. Commissioner Chrisman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple questions. Sir, did you indicate what the minimum depth of cover will be for soil over the top of the pipeline?
We bury our lines where the top of the ditch, or the bottom of the ditch is at 8 feet, which so the pipeline will be covered by a little over 7 feet roughly, which is, I believe that the PHMSA requirement is somewhere in the range of 3 feet, but we try to avoid any frost issues by making sure we get deeper than that.
Excellent. And then the only other thing, just for my own orientation purposes, I understand from the maps, and I think you had said it was LMS 059, but for me it's the first map in the original application. I understand where this all is taking place in relation to the county line, but the county line is pretty long going north and south. I think I know where this plant is. Is this the plant that is about 6 miles north of Tioga and then about a mile and a half east of the highway?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Okay. All my other questions have been answered. Thank you.
Mr. Bender, any follow-up?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson, Mr. Renfent, any further questions?
No, Your Honor.
Commissioners?
No, Your Honor.
Any questions from the commissioners? Seeing none, you may step down. And we'll take a 5-minute break. I would recommend not turning off anything, but be aware that you might still be on your camera. And if anyone wants to testify, again, the number to call in is 701-328-4081. You call that number, and then we'll call you back at the appropriate time. The number again is 701-328-4081. We'll take a 5-minute break, and we'll come back at 10:30. We're at recess. If everybody would make their way back online. I'm seeing Commissioners Crosius and Chrisman. Is Commissioner Fedorchuk back online?
She's still logged into the meeting.
Okay. Okay. Well, again, when I announced before we went on recess, the number to call in, and that number is 701-328-4081. That is for people from the public who wish to have a comment at this public hearing. And what happens is you call that number, 701-328-4081, and somebody will answer it and will get contact information and call you back at the appropriate time. Mr. Bender, are you online?
I am, Your Honor.
Mr. Johnson?
Here, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, I think we'll just begin because she is, we have video conference.
I'm here.
There she is. We will begin then. We're, I call the meeting back to order. And Mr. Bender, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Liberty calls Nanette Belzinga.
You were here for my previous warnings as to perjury?
Yes, sir.
And could you say your name one more time for me?
Sure. Nanette, N-A-N-E-T-T-E, Elzinga, E-L-Z as in zebra, I-N-G-A, okay. And I go by Nan.
Okay. So, Ms. Elzinga, so you understand what perjury is and the penalties for it?
Yes.
Understanding so, do you promise or swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Bender, you may begin.
Thank you. Nan, would you state your full name for the record, please?
Sure. Nanette Janine Elzinga.
And you indicated you go by Nan, is that correct?
That is correct.
And spell your last name, please.
E-L-Z as in zebra, I-N-G-A.
And by whom are you employed?
Kleinfelder Incorporated.
Why don't you just tell us just very briefly, what is Kleinfelder Inc.?
Kleinfelder is an engineering and environmental consulting firm.
And you're an employee with that firm?
That is correct.
What's your business address?
1801 California Street, Suite 1100, in Denver, Colorado, 80202.
And I don't want your address, but you are testifying today from Boulder, Colorado, is that correct?
That is correct.
What's you indicated you're an employee of Kleinfelder. What's your position with Kleinfelder?
I'm a project manager.
Okay. What I'd like you to do now, Nan, is briefly highlight for us your educational background and work experience.
I have a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering from Bucknell University. I've been working in this industry for 31 years. My experience is in environmental permitting, review of pipeline and transmission projects, NEPA projects, environmental construction services, and environmental remediation. Specifically on the pipeline side, I have experience with FERC resource reports, with preparing environmental assessments and environmental impact statements, and also with environmental compliance.
And you were extensively involved, were you not, in preparation of the application for the matter that is before the commission today?
That is correct, yes.
And what was your role with respect to the project? Not necessarily the application, but the project itself.
I'm a consultant to Liberty Midstream Solutions, and I'm the overall project manager responsible for the preparation of the application.
I know that, or I should say, Eric did provide a little information about the project, but from your perspective, can you provide us with a general description of the pipeline project that's before the commission today?
Sure. The pipeline will be 4.76 miles located in Montreal and Williams County. Do you want me to go into the study area, Lawrence?
Sure, go right ahead.
The study area for the project that was considered was a 1 mile corridor along the pipeline route.
Okay. And Eric had spent some time pointing out the study area, and that that appears on Exhibit 1, which is LMS 059, is that correct?
That is correct.
Why don't you spend a little time just describing for us the survey area that is depicted on your figure one, which is LMS 059.
So the field survey area that was used for this project is a 200-foot wide survey area centered on the pipeline, also includes temporary workspace and the point where the pipeline ties into the gas plant and also the interconnect.
Okay, and what approach for the environmental analysis of the corridor and route was conducted?
The first step is a desktop assessment of the route, utilizing online data sources, publicly available data sources, to assess both natural resources and cultural resources and any other potential environmental concerns. The second step was a field survey, as I just described, with that survey corridor for natural resources and cultural resources. And a sub-consultant was used for the actual field surveys. SWCA did those surveys.
Okay, and I assume you're familiar with the siting rules that the commission has in place with respect to siting of pipelines, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And you're also familiar with the provisions having to do with exclusion areas, avoidance areas, and selection criteria and policy criteria, is that correct?
I am familiar with those, yes.
Let's talk a little bit first about exclusion areas. Are there any exclusion areas located within the project corridor?
There are no exclusion areas present within the project corridor, including that 200-foot wide survey area.
Okay. And are there any avoidance areas located within the project corridor?
There are no avoidance areas present within that project corridor, so no avoidance areas would be impacted by the project.
Okay, and in terms of selection criteria, will there be any significant adverse effects resulting from the location, construction, and operation of the pipeline as they relate to the selection criteria?
No, and section 16.3 and table 6 of the application discuss this further, that there are no significant adverse effects and all impacts for the project would be temporary and short term.
And that table that you referenced, table 6, does that appear on LMS 044 and 045?
That is correct.
Now let's talk a little bit about policy criteria. Were the policy criteria set forth in the commission's siting rules considered and utilized to the extent possible by Liberty when designing the project?
Yes, the criteria was considered, and section 16.4 of the application discusses that criteria.
And does section 16.4, fall on pages 045, 046, and 047?
That is correct.
Now, earlier in your testimony, you identified a number of surveys that were conducted for this pipeline project. Were reports documenting those surveys included in the application that was submitted to the commission?
Yes, on the cultural resources side, the Class 1 and Class 3 cultural resources inventory reports was provided in Appendix D of the application. On the natural resources side, the natural resources and wetland delineation report was provided in Appendix F, and that covered the wetland and water body surveys, the wildlife and threatened and endangered species and habitat assessment. It also included the noxious weeds survey data and the tree, sapling, and shrub inventory data.
Can you briefly discuss for us the Class 1 and Class 3 cultural resource inventory that was conducted?
Yes, SWCA conducted those inventories, and two newly identified sites were identified. They were recommended as not eligible, and we have received SHPO concurrence for that recommendation. An unanticipated discovery plan was put into place for the project, which SHPO has also reviewed. And for these particular sites, a cultural resources monitor will be present during construction, and those particular areas will be marked prior to construction.
Based on these surveys, do you anticipate any long-term negative impacts from the construction of this pipeline project?
I do not.
I think you touched on this, but you said you have received SHPO concurrence. Is that correct?
Yes, that was received. The letters dated February 7th of 2020.
Let's move now to wetlands and water bodies. What were your findings with respect to those issues?
So SWCA identified three wetland areas within the survey area. They're identified in the application as WET01, WET02, and WET03. There was also some non-wetland water bodies identified within the survey area, and no waters of the state were present in the survey area. These areas are shown in the application on figure A4 of Appendix A. And Lawrence, I don't have that. I can scroll to the LMS page for that.
My understanding it's LMS 063. Do you have any reason to dispute that?
I do not.
There was a question when Eric was testifying as to the wetlands or water bodies. I'll have you address this question. Perhaps it will answer the question that was raised. There may be a follow-up. What measures will Liberty take to minimize impacts on the wetlands?
For the wetland identified as WET01, that will be open cut and will be returned to its pre-construction contours. The impact to that wetland will be temporary, and under Nationwide Permit 12, it meets the requirements of Nationwide Permit 12 of the Army Corps of Engineers. The other two wetlands identified as WET02 and WET03, those will be avoided by horizontal directional drill.
Okay, and can you discuss for us the findings with respect to the wildlife surveys that were conducted?
During the field surveys, SWCA observed and documented the wildlife and associated habitat. There were no actual sightings for any wildlife and no secondary sightings, such as evidence of tracks or feathers, fur, or scat. No indications of presence of threatened or endangered species within the survey area. They did identify suitable habitat for migratory birds, and the surveys did confirm the presence of that suitable habitat.
What is Liberty going to do to minimize or avoid potential impact to wildlife?
So Liberty will conduct pre-construction nest surveys and also conduct clearing of the right-of-way prior to the nesting season.
In your opinion, will there be any long-term negative impacts on wildlife if this project is approved and Liberty goes forward with constructing it?
No, there will not.
Can you briefly discuss for us the tree and shrub inventory in this area and potential impacts that this project may have to trees and shrubs?
Yes. In accordance with the Commission's tree and shrub mitigation specifications, SWCA did identify trees and shrubs within the survey area. They counted 7 tree, sapling, and shrub individuals that may be impacted by construction activities, and those will be mitigated in accordance with the Commission's tree and shrub mitigation specifications.
And there was also a survey conducted with respect to noxious weeds. Can you briefly discuss that for us?
Yes, no state or county listed noxious weed populations were observed at the time of the survey. Residual plant matter would likely have been observed if the noxious weed communities were present. Liberty is committed to monitoring and controlling noxious weeds within the right-of-way prior to and subsequent to construction.
And in conjunction with its application to the Commission, did Liberty consult with local, state, and federal agencies and other governmental entities regarding this project?
Yes.
And were copies of that agency correspondence included in your application?
Yes, those were included in Appendix G of the application.
And was there any other agency consultation that was made subsequent to the filing of Liberty's application with the Commission?
Yes, a letter was sent to the North Dakota Geological Survey on February 4th of 2020, and to date, a response has not been received.
Are you aware of any objections that Liberty may have received from any state or local or federal agency?
I am not aware of any objections by local, state, or federal agencies. There were certain recommendations made by agencies, and those were noted in the application.
So, Nan, finally, based on your study and review, the exhibits and testimony that you presented here today, and the statutes and rules and regulations of the Commission, in your opinion, are the proposed facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects?
Yes.
And in your opinion, will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota?
Yes.
And in your opinion, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources?
Yes.
And in your opinion, will the proposed facilities minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity, and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion.
Yes.
Your Honor, that's all the questions I have of this witness.
Mr. Johnson, do you wish to cross-examine this witness?
Do I just have one question. Nan, can you explain to me what the difference between the wetland area one that's being cross-cut is and why that one's not being horizontally drilled?
Yes, that's a seasonal wetland, and so the impacts will be minimal to that using the open cut methodology.
Any further questions?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Renfant.
None for me, Your Honor.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Great, thank you, Nan. Appreciate your testimony this morning. Do we have a copy of the Chabot concurrence letter?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't see that in my binder, but it must have come in separately. And
That's correct.
Is it in the exhibit number one that was prepared for this hearing?
It is not included. It was just recently filed.
Okay. All right. And then secondly, are the letter from the Geological Survey, usually they point out in pipeline hearings areas of geological instability. And since we haven't heard back from them, what have you done to identify those? And can you assure us that there aren't any in this route?
Yes, we did a desktop assessment of publicly available data for that particular area, for the geologic area, and we did not identify any areas of instability.
Okay. And so why was the North Dakota Geological Survey Agency not included in your initial scoping letters?
Oversight on my part.
Okay. And have you followed up with them? Can we get a copy of their letter in short order, do you think, or when you might expect that?
Yes. Lawrence, was that filed with the SHPO concurrence?
Oh, I thought you said that we hadn't heard back from them yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. For the original letter that we sent to them has been filed. But
yeah, no, that, but I'm interested in the response.
Yeah, will be filed.
Okay. And have you been in touch with them recently? Do you expect a response letter in short order from the Geological Survey?
I have not heard back from them, no.
Okay. So is that they aren't being responsive, or can you check with them and see when you might expect that letter?
Yes.
Okay. I'd just like a follow-up on that issue, just to close the loop on this and assure that their assessment is there's no areas of geological instability in this route as well. And that's it for me. Thank you.
And perhaps what we can do is at the end of the hearing, talk about that being filed as a late filed exhibit so that we have a little bit of orderliness to this.
Sounds good. Thank you.
That's an excellent idea as to the late filed exhibit. Commissioner Crotius.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just one question, and I did not see this in the application, so I'm assuming the answer is that it wasn't a factor either way. When you did the analysis on wildlife habitat, endangered species, did any of that relate to the timing of when you thought the project would be built versus when it may in fact wind up being constructed? Did timing come into play for any of those?
No, that was not a factor.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Good morning. The weed management plan that was submitted about a month ago, I just want to say I think it looks really good, and I appreciate the reliance it indicates that you're putting on the weed control officer in the one county and the extension agent who handles that responsibility in the other. And so I commend you for that, but I just want to say one thing and offer you an opportunity to respond. My one concern is on page 26 of the original application, the statement that based on some study in 2017, there were no state-listed noxious weeds found in Montreal or Williams counties. I don't know where something like that would have come from. I hope that you will rest assured. It's conceivable that this short of a pipeline could just not hit any, but it is really vital that you follow that weed management plan and survey it well and consult with those people, because somewhere in those counties, believe me, there are noxious weeds, and there were in 2017 too. Any response to that?
We will commit to following the weed management plan.
Excellent. And then could you open up the map so you have it in front of you?
Yes, I'm scrolling to it now. The overall, just the overall project map.
Yes.
LMS 059.
Yes.
Okay. I have it in front of me.
So that last map where the pipeline is running east and west, just a little bit north of a section line, the first about a third of it is further from the section line than the easterly two-thirds of it. And you can see something there that it would seem to me that this is designed to go around. Can you tell me what that is and assure me that it's not a residence or school or place of business that's occupied that would require a waiver?
That would be a question for Mr. Bankston.
Okay, I have no other questions, but I'm sorry that I didn't ask that when he was up. I thought it was in your corridor study wheelhouse. But I guess I just would like, before everything is wrapped up with this case, to confirm that is not something that requires a waiver, because it does appear like there's something there that probably is within 500 feet.
Your Honor, we're certainly willing to recall Mr. Bingstrom to answer that question if he knows the answer.
Okay. I'll allow that, but I have are you?
And Your Honor, I have no other questions for Ms. Elzinga. Thank you.
Okay. I had one question. Is there a sign certification in here?
Yes, that was filed yesterday.
Okay. Are there any further questions from Mr. Johnson or Mr. Renf? Do you have any questions, Mr. Bender?
No redirect, Your Honor.
Okay. Any further questions by Mr. Johnson or Mr. Renfant?
Not for Mr. Johnson.
Any questions from the commissioners? Hearing none, you may step down.
Thank you.
Do you wish to recall your witness, Mr. Bender?
But if I may, I want to ask him first if he knows the answer. If he doesn't know the answer, then
okay.
I probably
yeah.
won't call him. Submitted as a late file exhibit. But Eric, do you know the answer? Eric, are you there?
Is he there?
He's still on the line, but does not have a voice presence.
Okay. We'll give him a few seconds in case his microphone isn't on or he's trying to get online here. But if he isn't on in the next 15 seconds, we'll move on.
We can submit it as a late filed exhibit, Your Honor. I would suggest this is a guess on my part, but Commissioner Christman, I think that's probably an oil well pad, and they certainly would not want to go under that pad with the pipeline. But we will be certain on that and submit a late filed exhibit to address that issue.
Then, Your Honor, that was my assumption too, but because it appears to be within 500 feet, I just want to clarify that, or have the company clarify that it did not require a waiver.
Okay. Do you have any further witnesses, Mr. Bender?
No, Your Honor.
Do you have anything that you need to bring before the commission at this time, Mr. Bender, Mr. Johnson? Anything additional?
I don't have any closing arguments or closing comments, but I would like to thank the commission, the commission staff, and you, Your Honor. I understand these things don't just happen. It takes planning. It takes time on behalf of the commissioners to put something like this together. I'd also point out that not every agency or political subdivision that I deal with has been willing to do something like that. At situations where I was told, just wait, we'll get to this after all these problems are solved. So I want to pass along my thanks to everyone who made this possible.
Okay. It's now time for public testimony. Is there anybody in person in Tioga that wishes to testify? Mr. Johnson?
No, there isn't, Your Honor.
Is there anyone that's called in to the number?
Eric Benson is now back.
Oh, Eric Benson is now back. Mr. Benson?
Yes, I'm sorry. I apologize. I got cut off. Can you all hear me now?
Yeah. Did you hear the question from Mr. Bender?
I believe it was in reference to the jog on the east-west
okay.
section of the line at the very end.
Before you answer the question, and you're able to answer the question?
I believe so. That's
okay.
Well,
before you do, just be reminded you're still under oath.
You
can answer the question.
What I'm seeing on the aerial map, if you look closely, that's a well site. LMS 061 shows that more clearly.
Does that satisfy you, Commissioner Christman?
Yes, sir, it does, and thank you for clarifying.
Okay.
Sure thing.
Is there any person from the public that's called in to the number that I provided earlier? That number was 701-328-4081. If you're listening and you're a member of the public and you wish to provide testimony, that is the number you need to call. 701-328-4081.
According to our staff, no one has called in at this time.
No one has called in at this time. Over an abundance of caution, I'm going to give this about 4 minutes just in case somebody does call in. So everybody can just stay on the line or they can take a break, and we'll come back if we get anybody calling in the next 4 or 5 minutes. It'll be about 8 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock that we'll come back, and at that time we'll have closing remarks by the commissioners and talk about future plans. I understand that there's going to be some time for public comment to be provided in writing and perhaps a response by the company, and so I would like some suggestion as to the amount of time for that so that we can have an overall amount of time for a proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law. So we'll take this little break here of about 4 minutes now and see if anybody calls in. Again, if you're listening in and you're from the public, please call 701-328-4081. Okay. Well, we've double-checked here, and the lines are open, and no one has called in. And that being the case, I think it's time for closing remarks by the commissioners. Commissioner Fedorchak, any closing remarks?
I'll finish where we started. Thanks, everybody, for good, thorough hearing, Lawrence. I think it really helped that you put some time into kind of consolidating the exhibits and putting it out there in a way that was easy to reference. So I think that's an important takeaway for future meetings of this type, that we ask that that kind of advanced work is done. And I think that generally the technology worked pretty well. So I think that, you know, that piece is good lessons learned. I also really appreciate the ability to do this and offer this hearing and this public input and this way to complete our requirements under the law. I think it's really important for government to be innovative and responsive. and do our best to find ways to do our jobs, not ways to not do our jobs, even and especially when times are tough. So this is an unprecedented time, and for those who want to continue making investments in North Dakota, we want to send a message loud and clear that we're here to help you. So thank you very much. We'll make a decision on this as quickly as we can. And thanks for everybody's cooperation.
Commissioner Crosius.
Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you to the company. Thank you to staff, to everyone all around for making this happen. I said it initially in my comments, and I appreciate the company's willingness to make an investment in the state at a time when the oil and gas industry is to say the least, in uncharted territory from a pricing standpoint and just the uncertainty surrounding that. So it's all very important, and I was impressed with the quality of the application. I thought it was very thorough. I thought it was very detailed. And of course, we'll have to await a final decision and vote, but I really appreciate just the depth of detail in the application itself. So thank you everyone for that. And I think that would conclude my remarks. But again, thank you everyone, really appreciate it.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Your Honor, I'll just ditto what the other two commissioners have said in thanking our staff as well as the company and doing what was necessary to help us to be able to do what North Dakotans have been doing for over a century, and that's getting the job done, but getting it done in a way that meets all the requirements of the law and makes sure that it is in fact done correctly. So thank you, everyone.
Mr. Johnson, what was the time period that was being considered to leave the record open for people to comment from the public?
Your Honor, I believe that was 10 days.
Does anybody object to leaving it open for 10 days or have a different suggestion? Okay, it's going to be left open for that. And if something comes in, how much time would the company need to respond to those comments? Mr. Johnson, have you talked about it yet, or should I ask Mr. Bender for his suggestion?
I have not discussed that with Mr. Bender yet, so asking him might be appropriate.
Mr. Bender.
Your Honor, I think 5 days should be sufficient, and in the event that, and I don't think this is going to happen, but in the event that we were to get a lot of material, I believe that I could always ask for an extension, but I believe 5 days would be sufficient.
Okay. And today is April 14th, and so 15 days out would be the 29th, and then usually we give 2 weeks for the proposed findings of fact, conclusion of law and order, so that would be the 13th, it looks like to me. Let me just double check. Yes, the 13th. So does that sound reasonable to you for the proposed findings of fact, conclusion of law and order, Mr. Bender?
Yes, Your Honor. You probably will get it sooner than that, but that will certainly give me sufficient amount of time.
Okay. So just to make it absolutely clear, we're going to allow 10 days for the public to respond, which will be to the 24th of April, and then the company will have 5 days to respond to that, and that's to the 29th of April. And then if they need an extension, they can always ask for it, but then otherwise we'll expect proposed findings by the 13th. Do we have any late filed exhibits at this time that need to be offered? Mr. Bender and Mr. Johnson usually discuss this at a break, but Mr. Bender, do you have any?
I just note one, Your Honor, and that would be us to try to secure from the Geological Survey a letter responding to our informational letter, and hopefully they would indicate that there are no geologic conditions or issues in the area that would cause them concern. And perhaps we could just set the same date, that being filed, as for the public to, I'll probably do it sooner, but maybe no later than April 24th, or
okay.
Try to get it to you.
Any others that you are thinking of, Mr. Johnson?
I don't have any others, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's been offered, and there's no objection, and so we'll mark that as Exhibit 2 at this time, and it will be a late-filed exhibit, and it's admitted. So, if there's nothing else that needs to be brought before me at this time, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Bender, I am going to note the time to be 11:15 on April 14th, 2020, and this hearing, PU-20-022, on the application of Liberty for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit, is closed, and the record is kept open for late filed exhibits and for comment by the public and by Liberty if necessary. The hearing is closed.